This is episode 14 of Design Discipline, a conversation with Irmak Nur Sunal Lutkin. Born in Turkey and educated in the UK, Irmak is currently based in London, serving as Director of Digital Design at Reuters, where she looks after a design team that contributes across Reuters news products and services. Previously, she's worked with Atlantic Records, Sony Music, Puma, Adidas, CNN International, The Wall Street Journal, and XOXO Magazine as she cultivated more than 10 years of experience and insights in the design industry across the worlds of branded content, editorial publishing, news, and high-end digital UX, UI, and print design. This conversation that we had with Irmak was originally scheduled as a kind of guest lecture for my class on web design, app design, and usability, and filmed together with a live audience. I was juggling a few different responsibilities during the recording, and ended up with a few technical issues, including the complete disappearance of my video feed, but the talk was full of design wisdom, so we're going ahead and putting it out as a regular episode anyway. Specifically, Irmak and I spoke about her journey going from struggling to find internships all the way to being a director of design at one of the largest media companies in the world. We talked about how her work has evolved at a hands-on level as she progressed from junior to director level, and all the methodologies and know-how that she's been deploying. Since we had an audience of students, of course, we talked about how to get hired as a designer and her approach to hiring and team building. Overall, this has been a rare and insightful look inside the head of a senior design leader that should bring value to all of us navigating design careers. If you'd like to jump to any particular topic, feel free to use the bookmarks that we provide in the description and head over to designdiscipline.com/Irmak. Link in the description. If you would like to see a lightly edited transcript of the entire conversation. If you find any of this interesting, I'm sure you will also enjoy past and future episodes of Design Discipline where we explore and explain the vast landscape of design by having conversations with scholars, leaders, and creatives, as well as explaining concepts, bringing clarity to ideas from both academic and professional origins. So go ahead and download and subscribe to our podcast, like and subscribe in our YouTube channel, follow us on Twitter and Instagram as @DesignDiscipline, and join the membership program on our website, designdiscipline.com, to access exclusive content as you enjoy our conversation with Irmak Nur Sunal Lutkin, Director of Digital Design.
If there wasn't something wrong with the Zoom call or the presentation, would it be a presentation at all? Is the existential question around?
That's true. Actually, I was very surprised this week. You know, I did a drone demo in front of 100 people, like indoors, flying two drones in formation, and no one died. And I was very surprised. I was totally expecting like ambulance and police and potentially, you know, jail time, but nothing happened.
It's good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Okay. All right. Welcome. Good morning. Welcome to the show. It's so amazing that, you know, we get to connect to all kinds of experts all over the world, no matter where they are, and learn from them. And you represent like two different geographies at the same time. You are working in London, right? And you grew up in Turkey, which is also incidentally where I grew up too. Irmak and I have a lot of common friends, by the way, and that's how we met. But it's a great honor. It's a pleasure to have you here. Irmak Nur Sunal Lutkin.
It is a long name.
Yeah, it's. I just realized it's the first time I've actually tried to pronounce it in the full state. But can you tell us your story? Like, you are a design director, right? And you've been working at some of the most established, some of the largest media companies in the world. Can you tell us how your life transpired to bring you to this situation?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just good luck, which is the most frustrating thing to say. Well, good luck then fueled by, I guess, I don't know, being a nice person and hopefully good at my job. But I studied graphic design at university here in the UK. And actually I did a foundation course, which is a prerequisite in England for any arts, or it used to be for any art sort of degree. So you had to do this 1 year foundation And while I was doing it, the first half of it, they make you try everything. So you do a little bit of textiles, you do a little bit of fine art, you do this, you do that. So you just sort of get a feeling. And actually for the second half, I'd signed up for fine art. And then the day that we were supposed to start, like the second term, I went into the fine art room and I was like, I don't think I should be here. And I don't know what it was. Like it was very much, and I like my best friends were in that. And like, I was like, I don't think I want to be in this room. I think I want to go and join the visual communication room. And so like, I did this really weird move and the tutors got really annoyed with me. And they were just like, what do you mean you want to change last minute? And I was like, yeah, I want to do visual communication. Sorry. And so that's kind of where I started the journey for graphic design, by making like a really random on the spot change in what I wanted to study, and finished foundation, studied undergraduate graphic design through a bunch of slightly unfortunate circumstances. Ended up, it was fortunate that I ended up doing a master's degree as well, but it was visa issues, which I'm sure you are more than familiar with.
Yeah.
So forced my hand at when I was going to do the master's and where I was going to do it. But I'd already moved down to London at that point. I went to university at Loughborough, which is like a small student town in the middle of England. And I'd already moved down to London. I'd secured myself an internship at Atlantic Records through a friend at uni, which also was completely by chance. They did an internship and met the designer there and said, hey, my friend's a designer, can she do an internship? And he was like, sure. So I feel like a lot of it was happenstance, and I'm so happy it happened that way, because you know, the rest of my career kind of followed off from that. But yeah, I did my MA while I was working as a designer, a junior designer, well, intern, and then a junior designer there. And then I decided I'm moving back to Turkey. I've had enough of England and its visas and its ways. And so I moved back to Turkey, pretty much like prepared to stay forever. I was just like, I'm done with England. Like, we're good. And just before I left, I met the person who is now my husband in England, which was, yeah, interesting timing. So I moved home and started sort of exploring what I could do there. Found out that there, you know, when you study in a country that isn't your own, you come back and people are like, oh, your degree counts for nothing. Like, who are you? What's that work experience you have? We don't count that, especially at a junior level. So I couldn't find any work. And I was like, oh, crap. Like, what am I going to do? Can I swear? Is that allowed? Is everyone
it's allowed. It's editable in post.
Good. Okay. Also, crap isn't really swearing. But I went through a bit of a phase where I was just like, maybe I shouldn't be doing design. Like, I'm obviously not good enough to get a job in Turkey. Like, none of the agencies, design agencies wanted me. None of the advertising agencies wanted me. So I was like, I'm going to marketing. And I did a 3-month traineeship at like a pharmaceutical company in their marketing department. I realized at that point that I love design and I need to be doing design. So I started looking for other roles and got a job there at a magazine. But I just sort of ended up back in England because my boyfriend at the time was here and he couldn't get anything in Turkey either. I met a friend of mine from school in London for like coffee, and she was just like, oh, you're looking for a job. My boyfriend works at CNN. chat to him. Like, so many of my, and I think that's like a really lucky thing that I had that in the beginning, where people were like, oh, you know, I know someone who needs someone, which I think, you know, it counts for so much sometimes, especially in the early days. And so I went in for an interview. The role was more junior than what I had been working at. But at that point, again, visas, I was like, I need to get my head in somewhere, head in, foot in some, you know. And so I started there, and that's kind of where, like, I feel almost like the beginning of my career, like the second half of it started, because that's kind of where I started working in their custom content team. So they create advertising content for clients that sort of uses the CNN what's it called? Oh, words are escaping me today. Anyway, they create custom content, and that's
like the brand identity, or
Well, they create like videos and articles and sort of microsites, which like feels like such a 90s word that I don't like using it, but that's kind of what it was. Sort of sites that had like, and I mean, even now in my role at the journal was similar, where it has like the brand's header on it. So it's like sort of endorsed essentially by the brand, but it's created by a completely separate team.
Is that what they call advertorials?
Yeah, pretty much. The point is to make the content that's actually sort of brand agnostic almost, so that it's for the reader. So at CNN, I started there, kind of not really knowing what the role was going to be. And my senior designer that hired me left a month after I started. So I was kind of left a little bit wallowing and being like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, there's no one here to show me the ropes. And it was a lot of digital design. At the time, I didn't know it, but it was leading me towards UX. But I kind of just, there was a lot of animation work for flash banners, if you'll believe it. I was there for 3.5 years, I think. And then after that, similar role at the journal, same sort of team. And then recently, so in November, I started at Reuters in a slightly different role where I now look after a much larger team. Sorry, that was like a really long rounded way of saying how I got to where I got.
It's so interesting, though. You know, you go through all this education and you put together portfolios and you have your CV and you have all of these things, and then you end up finding all of your work through friends. That seems to be a very common pattern among designers, especially. You know, I've started doing design, actually doing the websites for my friends and people in my university and different clubs and things like that. And my first job was actually just sitting in a cafe or something with a friend, and we were talking about things. We were both graduating at the same time, and he found a job somewhere. He was telling me about his job and how interesting it is, and I said, hey, that sounds really cool, can you get me a job at this company? I want to do this too. And he got me the job. Like, he literally got me in the next week. That was so random. So being nice to people, I guess, as you said, pays off.
Yeah, and I think especially in the design industry as well, and it's not who you know, because I like, that's just like a horrible thing to say.
Yeah, but that's not the case. But having a network,
it's kind
of
like your network, and especially for, but that's one thing that I didn't really have out. I don't think I had that much of it. I don't think I had that much of a network. You know what I mean? Like, it was just lucky, and it was a random network. But I think being open as well to sort of trying things, because I feel like, you know, for when I moved back to London, if my friend, she said, oh, you know, my boyfriend works at CNN, and I'd been like, oh, I don't, maybe, what's it? Like, if I kind of just jumped in and I was like, sure, why not? Like, let's go see. So I think maybe having like the openness to just try stuff out and to go and be like, see what that's like, yeah.
Cool stuff. I have some like hands-on questions for you. So what even does the job of a design director involve? So you're doing this right now at Reuters, right? And you were a design director at CNN before. It's two different companies, reasonably similar, I guess. Are they similar in size? I don't know. Or is one tremendously bigger than the other one or something?
Oh, that's a good question. I was a design director at the Wall Street Journal. So I think I was a senior designer at CNN, just, you know, I don't want anyone
okay.
Hey. Don't want people to be like, hey, she's lying on her CV. So it's very different in the sense that at the Wall Street Journal, I was design director for the custom content team. So it was a smaller team, the team that I looked after in general, smaller. Whereas at Reuters, I've moved over into a role that is part of the product team rather than the custom content team. So I now look after quite a significant number more of designers. The job of a design director, I think, depends on what company it's at. I think in certain circumstances, it's more around being the decision maker around like the design decisions. So leading those conversations, coming up with the visual language, And if you've got a team that you're looking after sort of the senior designers, the, you know, the midweight designers, the junior designers, the interns, and helping them move forward with their work. And then, I mean, it's actually, that's pretty much it. And I do the same thing here at just different scales. So at Reuters, Reuters itself is probably similar in size to the journal, but the greater company that Reuters belongs to, which is Thomson Reuters, is huge compared to the parent company. So it's part of a smaller group within Thomson Reuters. And here I look after a team of UX designers, digital designers, ad developers, and UX researchers as well. So it's a bigger team that I'm responsible for.
It's impressive that you're saying that you look after them. You're not like managing them or something. That's what a lot of people would say.
I don't know. I feel like I have a responsibility towards them to look after them and make sure that like they're happy in their jobs and, you know, able to do their jobs well. So I don't feel like I'm managing them. I feel like, you know, they're my team. And actually, before I started, a lot of the designers that were in my team now were kind of in disparate, I don't know if that's the right word, but like they didn't really connect with each other a lot. So there wasn't a design community. So one of the biggest things that I've been doing since I started is actually trying to bring everyone together, whether they work on product or they work on commercial projects or they do ad work, like get them all to sort of share with each other, collaborate a whole lot more. We use here at Reuters, we use Figma. They made the switch before I started, but like one of the things that I was told was like, you need to get your whole team on Figma, which I was so happy about because like Figma is my jam.
Nice. We use Figma too. When I teach in the class, I always do my work in Figma too. It's just so good.
It's funny because like when I talk about it, I almost hear myself and I'm like, it sounds like they're paying me to talk about this. I'm not. Like, I just genuinely think it's a great product.
It is one of my business goals within the next few years to be paid by Figma somehow. I just love it.
Yeah. If you find out how to do that, come like, bring me on as well. I would love to
I think they have like a little fund, even like venture capital kind of thing, where they invest in startups who are, for example, developing design tools, sometimes in the form of Figma plugins even. They have sponsorships that they give out to content creators. I would love to be able to get in touch with them, but I just need to grow some of those a little bigger before that happens. But it's in the trajectory. When I talk to my students, by the way, about how to do design work, we sort of have discussions about, you know, business outcomes and what does design do for business and so on. And we have discussions about deliverables, the kinds of, you know, documents, things that we create. As a design director, what are those for you? Like, what kinds of business outcomes or purposes are you interested in at the company where you work? And what do you actually produce? Like, what is the thing that you do in Figma, for example, to make that work happen?
What we use Figma for is essentially designing our products. So we use it as a collaborative tool and as sort of a space where we can have our design libraries. I look after sort of 3+ different products for Reuters. I'm not going to go into the weeds of it because like they are very specific, but one of them is the Reuters.com website. So for example, we recently, literally yesterday, had a launch of a new header that was designed by my team. We worked on it together over sort of the span of multiple weeks. So for example, all of our like web design, everything and UX design goes onto Figma. And we sort of use it in that way, if that kind of makes sense.
I will return to the topic of Figma later. There's just some other questions I want to go through before I do that, because that discussion has the potential to go through very deep down a rabbit hole. Do you have any like visual styles or methodologies or tools or like anything that you've been like using frequently during like all of your design adventures? So for example, I'm a big fan of like Swiss design, because I do a lot of work on the web and it's very easy to implement in websites. So is there anything tactical like that? Any kind of design trend or any method or anything that you love sort of using all the time?
I wish I could say yes. And that sounds really exciting, the Swiss one. I don't really. I think for me, I don't think it's a design trend, but I think utility and like creating things that are useful for people and that sort of are very, as much as possible, based in like usability over anything else, but also still look good. But I don't know that there's a specific thing for it. I think a while back when I first started at CNN, I was doing like really these like big pages, and it would have been in the early days of the parallax. Like I was
a parallax. It just what is that?
Oh, so you know, like on websites where like the background is almost like static and like things move over them.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So like it kind of almost feels like you've got more like movement on the page.
Yeah.
Like, we did a lot of parallax background things, like in my like sort of early digital days, where I was just like absolutely obsessed with it. But that was a while back, and I feel like it's had its day, and like everything's been moving more towards clean and sort of simple.
How do you even design that? Like, what were you designing inside of it in those days? Was it Photoshop?
In those days, it was Photoshop. Oh, good old Photoshop.
How do you make a parallax animation in Photoshop?
So you don't. You imagine it. You imagine it in your mind, and then you put it up. So you sort of do a static design of the whole page, and then you hope that your developer sort of is, you know, feels your feels, and you share the file with them, and you sit down with them and say, hey, by the way, I want like these four images to like be parallax. And they go, oh, okay. But I actually, while I was at CNN, our developer also left at one point. I swear it's not me pushing people out. okay. He left like a year after I started. So he found another job somewhere else. But between him and our new developer starting, I was like, hey, I'll do a little bit of coding. Like I've always been interested. So I did a little bit of HTML5 CSS like training. And so actually, I had quite a good idea of what, and I still do, I have a good idea of what isn't possible from like what you've designed statically to what you want to build. And so I think that actually helps a lot, having that background and the knowledge in being able to communicate, for example, with your engineers, your developers that you work with, to be able to say, here's what I have in mind. And then even give examples of other sites or like code pens or something where you can go, this is how I imagine it working. And so you can kind of collaborate with them.
You're like a design leader in your company. I presume you make hiring decisions or participate in them. You know, you interview a lot of people. And you said that you know HTML. I think it's critical, by the way, for the job of a web designer, an app designer, to actually be familiar with the technical infrastructure, the, you know, the HTML or the whatever language the app comes in, of those things. But my question is, what is the stage where that becomes really critical? Like, would you hire a junior designer who doesn't know HTML? Would you hire a senior designer who doesn't know HTML, for example? Is there a point where that really becomes, you know, you must sort of understand the technicalities of it?
I think that's a really...
Never, maybe, for you? Would you have that opinion?
I would probably, so I would list it in a job description as a nice to have. And if they talk about it during the interview process, that would be interesting. I think for me, what would be important is more that they have an understanding of it if they can. I don't know. I don't think that I would not hire someone because they don't have that information. I do think I completely agree with you. I think it makes the job so much easier if you have that understanding. And I would probably err towards the side of picking someone who had that background.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, there's, you know, you get a lot of applications you have to sort of eliminate somehow. And this is one of the things that for me, for example, stands out, that especially if you've had more experience, you know, years into the game, you should have over those years sort of gotten your hands on that stuff as well.
And I think it also kind of almost highlights some like a designer's intrigue and curiosity into other fields, which
exactly.
I think you need that, because you don't want someone who's going to go, well, I do this one thing and it's the only thing I do. Like for me, you know, having curiosity and sort of constantly learning is really important, which is, you know, why things like Figma coming along, like, you know, if you're not open to learning new things, like you might be like, oh, what's this thing, and then get left behind, which is the worst thing I think anyone in a design career can do, is to not keep learning and to not keep sort of looking at what's like the next technology out there, what's the next tool that I can use to do my job better.
What are some like filters that you apply when you're in that like process of screening CVs? With my students, we were looking at a lot of their portfolios recently, and you know, I was I tried to give them some useful advice about how to improve those things. But I'm always wondering when I talk to someone like you who's involved in these decisions, is there anything that you see on people's portfolios or CVs where you go like, okay, no, this is the no pile? Or is there anything that you always, you know, when you see that thing, it always deserves a second look, it moves on to the next stage? Are there those patterns?
The more CVs I see and the more portfolios I see, the less I actually care about the CV part, which, like, not to say that it doesn't matter. I think a well-designed, informative CV is very important. Cover letters are incredibly important. Like, that's kind of the one place that, you know, on a page, you have the chance to tell me why you're right for the role and like what you can bring to it.
How long?
How long is the cover letter?
How long do you want it to be?
Not too long. Short enough that like I can read it quickly. Long enough that it gives me enough. So it's not just like, you know, like, hey, I'm amazing, hire me. Because like that's just, you know, you're like, no, I need a little bit more than that. But I would say, to me, the portfolio is the most important. So if I had to like rank it, I'd say portfolio, cover letter, then CV.
Okay.
And I would say from a portfolio perspective, the thing that makes me put people's CVs in maybe a no pile would be either a portfolio that doesn't have a wide enough variety of work, if it's an irrelevant portfolio. So if like I'm hiring for like a digital role and the portfolio has just illustration work in it, I'm like, that doesn't show me how you're going to be right for the job. If there's too much on there and a lot of it is like not your best work, but you've just like shoved it on there because you feel like you need to have at least 10 pieces, like that also is a big flag, a red flag, because I'd rather you show me 4 pieces of your work that you're really proud of and that you can talk me through than having like 15 things that are half baked and you like, you don't love them, you know, and it's just sort of there to be filler. So I think that's probably the most important thing. And also when I look at a portfolio, I can generally get a feel for someone's aesthetic abilities and like their values and what sort of they feel is, you know, good design. So I think if it doesn't match with what I'm hiring for, then that usually will, it'll mean I'll go into the cover letter and read that through to see if there's something in there. And I think for junior roles, especially, like sometimes your portfolio just isn't as polished or as good as, you know, someone who's been in the industry for longer. So that's where the cover letter comes in really importantly, because you can make a case for, you can be like, my portfolio might not be amazing, but I'm super keen and I love your company, or, you know, a list of reasons why you're great for the job.
I'll sort of summarize or re-summarize your career just as to set up a question that I've been meaning to ask. You were a designer for Sony Music, Atlantic Records, lead designer for EXO magazine, a Turkish lifestyle publication, I believe.
Yeah.
Even though I don't know what that means. Then you moved to London. You were a senior designer at CNN International and a senior designer at Wall Street Journal. Now, design director at Reuters. And this is like over the course of 10 years, right? That's a long time.
Just a little over 10, yeah.
Yeah. I imagine that you learned a lot over these roles. Like even just saying them out loud is a job, you know? So I imagine the actual learnings, there must be some gems in there. What is one thing that you know today that would have made like a significant difference if you could go back in time and explain that to yourself as a design student, as a college student?
I would have gone back and said, find mentors, find more mentors, and, you know, utilize their generosity and, you know, like take their advice and find the right mentors, because I had good mentors and I had a couple of bad mentors that sort of really tried to discourage me from actually doing what I do now, which like is probably, you know, an entire multiple hours worth of conversation another day. But so yeah, sort of take the good advice that you like, you know, sit and consider the advice that doesn't sit well with you. And like, you know, if it really feels wrong, then maybe it is wrong. And also just have hope and, you know, continue being nice and continue working hard. I think that would be the thing that like I would tell my university self, because I used to worry a lot. And I mean, even now I still worry, but it, you know, like just, will I find a job? Especially coming out, like graduating, I was just like, oh my God, like, will I ever find a job? It wasn't even a job. It was, will I ever find an internship? Will I find an internship? Will I find a job? If I find a job, will they keep me? You know, like that sort of, that mindset of like, oh, and I think that's really real for a lot of people, probably most people, where you just worry about it. So, you know, just keep going at it and know your worth, I think is a good one, which I don't think I did.
Have you ever like considered entrepreneurship, freelancing? I'm sure you have. Like, how did you end up focusing on this path of working at larger institutions?
So I did freelancing for a while, actually, when I moved back to Turkey. So I was still freelancing for some of the people that I'd worked with before I moved home. But I think in the depths of my mind, I had this like voice saying, you know, find a job, you know, find a good stable job. And I think, again, from the visa perspective, I needed somewhere that would keep me and sponsor me possibly. So freelancing was only an opportunity and an option if I didn't need a visa. So I don't really think I had that much of a choice. I've also been quite lucky in the sense that I quite enjoy the corporate environment. I like big companies. I think there's a lot of room to grow. I've learned a lot in them. There was a point a little while back where I considered going freelance, and I think it would have been fine. It provides you with the opportunity to be a little bit more flexible with your time and the work that you take on. But I think for me, it felt right. And I went from one big company to the next And they've all been American companies. Although Reuters is, I think, originally Canadian, but always like North America somehow. I don't know why.
That's interesting. I mean, North American business has a lot of influence in the world. They produce a lot of writings and, you know, a lot of people like write blogs and write books in English. So it's kind of because of the language and because of the written record, it's very influential in the design world in general. Like in Europe, we read about the methodologies and sort of things that they develop in Silicon Valley, for example, to do UX design. Speaking of UX design, we have a little question from one of our students, which is, when you're working with UX designers and researchers, what, in your opinion, is some of the most important qualities that these people should bring to the team?
That's a good question. I would say for me on my team, especially at the moment, openness to collaboration is like a really big one. And I think that's possibly a tiny bit less relevant for a researcher because they kind of have their own remit and do their own thing. But I think working together with the rest of the team and having that sort of, and as I said earlier as well about a design community, sort of fitting into that and being happy to share ideas, to share your work, to get feedback, to give feedback. I think those are probably, you know, as high as your ability to do the work itself and sort of get essentially providing a community for everyone else. And if you're the only one on the team as well, then I would say pretty much just being helpful and nice. And I said that earlier. And nice is like, nice isn't the best word, but it kind of encompasses a lot of,
harmonious is a word that I like.
Yeah,
harmony with people, you know.
Yeah, and helpful, I think, is sort of you know, there's a lot of I've done a lot of courses on coaching and mentoring and things, and there's a thing that sort of gets talked about a lot about growth mindset and like having people and hiring people who have that mindset, where it's never like, oh, I can't do that because, you know, blah blah blah. It's, oh, that's not something we've done before, but hey, here's how we can try and fix it. Like always having that attitude to problem solving rather than just going, no, that doesn't work.
How do you, we were talking about UX researchers and I was wondering, because you also said that you are focused on utility and usability and appropriateness when you do design, more than any kind of like design aesthetic or whatever. In these companies where you work, do you do a lot of your own usability research and UX research, or do you rely on, you know, best practices as graphic designers or the literature, or do you buy it from somewhere, from consultants and so on? How does that work? What is the process of gaining insights for you?
There is a little bit of both of those. So I think in my current role, we do tests, and the wider company have a whole load of researchers, but we also either have contract researchers who come in for projects, or we'll run them ourselves. I think it depends on the product or the work itself you're doing. So if we're launching something new, we'll usually test it out, do usability testing. If it's for an existing product, we get a lot of customer feedback. It's not on Reuters.com, but on some of our other products we do. We'll use that as a starting point to sort of create a hypothesis of what we want to design and then sort of take it from there. I don't think that a lot of places I've been at before had much of that. So a lot of our decision-making was based more on design best practices and sort of more about educating ourselves on UX design and like what is better for our readers, and also utilizing data and analytics from the websites and saying, well, this page performs really poorly. Let's analyze why, and then look at sort of another page that performs more like positively and sort of do a bit of a comparison.
I mean, the way that we understand design is so broad these days, it's kind of hard to define. And for example, when we train designers in different kinds of design educations, we teach them how to do things like design thinking and sprints and workshops and, what is it called? KJ diagramming and journey maps and so on. But we also teach them about typography and graphic design, sometimes photography, these more tactical, visual, maybe artistic sort of things. Are these in the various companies that you were at, are these things done by the same people, or is there a team where these are like sort of divided between people? So one person does workshops and things and then hands over the results to another person, and that person does the visual design and so on. So how is the merging of responsibilities and divisions of labor change in your observation as things like company size changes or your seniority level changes?
Surprisingly, probably actually, even thinking about it now myself, even though I've been in big companies, I've always been part of quite small teams, like very nimble, very small teams. So usually all of the responsibilities fell to either one or two specific people in the team. So it's never been like, especially before I was at Reuters, like we didn't have like a separate researcher. We didn't have like a separate, we had other teams we could utilize. So we would have like a data and analytics team that we could get information from. So I think it depends, and even in my current role, we're still quite, in comparison to the greater design team at Thomson Reuters, for example, who are, they've got like 200 plus people in different pods of design teams, and they have like a UX research team, and they have like design systems team and like all of that. Whereas my team is very much like, we're a small, compared to that, we're much, much smaller. And so we do have more like sort of separated roles. But again, a lot of it is everyone works together. So we kind of run a lot of it together. Well, I feel like my experience has been in such small teams that it's always been everyone kind of has their fingers in all the pies. So everyone helps out.
Yeah, I mean, my philosophy in life when I collaborate people has always been to just look at what other people enjoy doing and what they're good at and what they bring to the table. And I just try to like complement that by doing something. Like I was doing music in high school, playing with different bands with friends, and people ask me what instrument I play, but I would just walk in the room, and like we were high school kids, you don't have to be like a virtuoso, so I just looked at what other people were playing. I just picked up the instrument that no one else was playing, and we formed a band, and music started happening. We all eventually learned, actually, in this fashion, our instruments. So I think that flexibility is that I kind of find it similar to what you've described here, just to be able to fit into the team and complement what is being done using a broad array of skills, something from that array, which is appropriate for that time and purpose. We are in the last 10 minutes, I believe, of our scheduled time, because I know that you have to go. Is there anything that you would like to say that we haven't covered so far? Maybe a question that you wish people ask you more often, or a piece of advice or request that you'd like to impart on our audience?
Not that I wish you'd asked, but I think a thing that I wish someone had talked to me about when I was sort of learning the trade, as it were, is about how important it is to try out different companies, different ways of working, different roles, and to not be afraid of, like, if you find somewhere like that you get a job at, and I'm not saying just leave jobs, because obviously everyone, you know, we need to make money, and like, I'm not advocating for people just like walking off, but if you're in a role and it doesn't feel right, or the company doesn't feel right, like, there is no shame, and it's not a failure if you say, this isn't for me, I'm going to try something else, I'm going to look for something else. Like, I think there's so much pressure to sort of get your foot in and like stay somewhere and like get that at least 1 year of experience. And it like, no, like if you start somewhere and the culture is not right, your manager is not nice, like, I don't know, you don't like the furniture, you don't like the equipment they've given you, like, it's a Turkish saying, I don't know if it translates, but like, you are not a donkey that's been tied to a post, right? Like, you can leave.
Okay.
Yeah? So I don't know if that translates to English. I say this more frequently than I think I should, but you are not a donkey. Like, just go, you know, like, find somewhere that makes you happy, that gives you work that you're happy doing. And another thing is, good managers exist. Find a manager that actually helps you and coaches you and like helps you develop.
Or good clients, you know, good partners, good collaborators, that also works. I think one thing people underestimate, by the way, earlier in their careers, which sort of causes this issue of maybe getting stuck, as you described, is that they underestimate how much easier it gets to find the job as you progress through your career. Like, as you become more and more skillful in your craft and more advanced in your job, or just plainly by virtue of having looked for jobs before, because that too itself is a skill in the process that you improve through practice. It just gets easier and easier as you move on.
People get really put off. Like, I do some mentoring, and like, the number of people I've spoken to where they're like, oh, I've made like 15 applications and I've not heard back. And it's like, man, you need to do like 100. And you probably, like, you might not hear back from most of them, but that's kind of the resilience, I guess, to build that resilience, to like keep applying for stuff. Like, you might not get it. You might get an interview. You might not get the job, but the experience that you'll gain during that interview, no matter how horrendously it goes, if you don't get the job, you know, it's practice. And the more you practice, the better you get at it. And an example I'm going to give, and I feel like I read like a LinkedIn article or something around this somewhere, and then I was like, oh, I had that. I interviewed about maybe a year or so ago for a role at a really big company that's not the one I'm working at now, while I was interviewing for my current role. And it went really well. I got like 2-3 interviews down the line. Like, it was pretty serious. And I think they were down to like the last couple of people with me. And I didn't get the job. Like, I just, they felt that it wasn't a good match. And I'm so glad that they told me, because I asked for feedback and they said, we love you, like, you're really great, but we don't think you're the right match for the job. We need someone with more experience with X, Y, Z. And I was like, hey, like, thank you for being candid. And I just said, look, if anything else comes up, I would, you know, you guys are awesome, I would love to work with you, just let me know. And they were like, cool, thank you. And I said that thinking they're never going to call me back. Like, that's just the sort of thing you say. And then they say, sure. And then nothing happens. And actually, a couple of months down the line, and by that point, I'd found this job, like, I'd gotten this job, and I was like 100% committed to it, and like didn't want to consider anything else. But I got an email from the HR person saying, hey, by the way, there's, you know, they linked out the job to me and said, the hiring manager wants you to apply for it because they think you're perfect for it. And I was like, thank you so much, I've got something else. But, you know, if I hadn't found something else by that point and I was still looking, I could have applied for that and I would probably be more likely to get it because I'd obviously made this good impression with them. So there's a lot to say about being nice.
That's going to be like the title of this episode.
Be nice. You're not a donkey, be nice.
That's so cool. I noticed something recently. So I was designing a course about, you know, web design and app design and digital product design and so on. And I shared the course with my students and they went through it. One of the pieces of feedback that I got from my students, one of the things that they noticed was how few of the materials that I put in sort of covered a female perspective, for example. A lot of the content was authored, written by my men, or YouTube videos produced by men, design portfolios and examples by a lot of guys. Women were, for example, a minority in the examples, and I didn't do this deliberately. And I told them, you could also say, hey, where are the Black people? Where are the Asian designers? Where is the Middle Eastern perspective in all of this? And those perspectives are also missing. So perhaps as someone who maybe represents both of those perspectives, for example, the sort of Middle Eastern, Mediterranean origin perspective and the female perspective, what would be your comment on this issue? What is a piece of wisdom that you possess from this perspective that you would like to impart on a wider audience of designers and design students, for example?
That's such a heavy thing. I agree. And I think there's a lot of questions around why there isn't more female leadership in the design world and in the creative industries. I think it's getting slightly better. There is a level of it that, I mean, I guess it ties back also to all sorts of, gender equality, pay equality, like larger conversations that are being had anyway. But I guess we shout about our work a lot less than the middle-aged white dudes do. I probably don't shout about it enough either. And I think also a lot of women find it harder, and I don't want to generalize, but I, at least in my experience, even when I was asking for job title changes or for salary changes, I found it so hard to make that push. And you just don't have the same confidence as a lot of others, possibly men, possibly white, have to do that. Don't let any of that be a hindrance to what you want. And I think sort of set your sights, set your goals on something that you want to achieve, and just go for it. And again, find mentors, find female mentors, find male mentors who are happy to, give you non like biased advice.
I know that you do a bit of mentoring too. I don't know if you're doing it right now, but I know that you have been very active as a mentor to younger designers and especially women, I believe. That was the scope of one of the programs that you were in. Where can we find you and your thoughts on the internet? And do you have a blog that we should read, or any activities out there, or should we follow you anywhere?
You can follow me on LinkedIn. That's probably the one place that, because I don't really do a lot of social media stuff anymore. Again, that's probably like another 2 hours of conversation.
All right.
But LinkedIn is a good place to find me. I do some mentoring on ADP List, but I believe in like longer term mentoring working better for most people. So yeah, if anyone's interested and we can sort of put time in, ADP List or LinkedIn is good. And I don't have a blog. I think I wrote like one thing and I was like, and then I still did like a new job and I was like, I don't have time. But yeah. And I'm also doing a project with two of my friends who are also recent mothers, which I am, around motherhood and going back to the workplace. So it's a little bit less design focused, but we haven't quenched it yet, but we're just sort of talking about the injustices that, parents and especially mothers face.
That's
days.
So exciting. I think, when you encounter these challenges in life, such as motherhood or being a foreigner somewhere, or, any other thing, as designers, we have this unique, maybe superpower of considering solutions to it. So you can design a business, you can design a new app solution, publication, resource, whatever, to help other people in that situation, like you're doing with the project for new mothers, I guess. That's so awesome. I love having that superpower and sharing that with you. But thanks for being with us. I see that we're out of time. You probably have another meeting to get to. It is a work day.
It is. I mean, I feel like I've not answered a lot of questions from the students. I could probably I can stay on for another 5 or 10 minutes if,
all right,
if people want to ask questions.
I'll do that. I'll stop the recording, actually, in that case. This has been episode 14 of Design Discipline, a conversation with Irmak Nursunal Lutkin, design director at Reuters. If you found any of this interesting, I'm sure you will also enjoy past and future episodes of Design Discipline, where we bring you into the room for conversations with scholars, leaders, and creatives. We explain concepts from advanced research and design practice. And we do this for you to illuminate patches in the vast and diverse world of design, so you can see what's ahead of you as you walk your own creative path. So go ahead and download and subscribe to our podcast and give it a 5-star review. Like and subscribe on our YouTube channel. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram as @DesignDiscipline and join the membership program on our website, designdiscipline.com, to access exclusive content, which includes the transcript for this episode.